Hi there, and welcome to dnewman.org. I'm Dan Newman. Glad you could join us today. Today's a special show because we're going to follow up on what we began last night when we titled our podcast just simply Broken. We talked about the U.S. Senate, how broken it is. We gave you some examples and how it all plays into everything going on in D.C. And tonight, in this podcast, we're going to talk about the House of Representatives, the U.S. House of Representatives. And so let's just get started. Let's crank it up right now. The House of Representatives, as probably most of you know, is where all bills that are hopefully going to be turned into law after presentation and debate and amendments and finally getting something put together in the House and then passing it across the hallway to the U.S. Senate. Anything to do with money, budgeting, spending money, it's supposed to originate in the House of Representatives. Well, we are right now in the 115th Congress. That's the Congress 2017-2018. And we've got a little perspective. We can look back at what Congress has been able to do in the last year, the first year of President Donald Trump's administration. And so let's take a look, see. As a matter of fact, they've been quite busy. Doing what is still out for debate. But what they did do was they came up with a total of 177 bills that made it across the hall to the U.S. Senate, made it out of the U.S. Senate, and became law with the president's signature. 177. Now, that sounds astronomical to me. It probably does to you, too. But let's talk about those laws. Now, this is the body that has to do what is necessary, initiate what is necessary, so that all of the tax dollars that we send to Washington, D.C., well, actually, we don't send it. The IRS confiscates it one way or the other. But it ends up in Washington, D.C. for the government to use spending for whatever. All the normal good stuff, the U.S. military, infrastructure, of course, funding the government, our social programs, things like Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, all those things are funded by the tax dollars that we send there. And how that's funded and how much, in what way it's funded and when it's funded, has to be initiated by the U.S. House of Representatives. 177 of those got across the hallway to the U.S. Senate, were passed into law, and let's talk about a few of those 177 laws that were signed into being after leaving the House, going through the Senate. H.R. 4547, that's an example. It was signed into law on April the 13th, just a few weeks ago. And the title of that is Strengthening Protections for Social Security Beneficiaries Act. Now, that is a very important consideration for all of those, especially, that are currently on Social Security and those that will be at some future date. And then there was H.R. 1865. It was signed into law 2 days before H.R. 4547, the one we just mentioned. And 1865 is to allow states and victims to fight online sex trafficking. And that act was originated in 2017, just signed into law. Again, a very worthy law, no doubt. But folks, all of the seriousness of laws that have originated in the House and end up in the Senate, it almost stops there. I will tell you this, of the 177, less than a handful. Think about that. Less than a handful. That means less than five had any real significance or impact in any good way on the United States. Almost all of them were laws regarding very insignificant things. I'll give you a few examples. H.R. 3369, signed into law on March 23rd of this year. It is to designate the facility of the United States Postal Service located at 225 North Main Street in Spring Lake, North Carolina, as the Howard B. Pate Jr. Post Office. And then, of course, there's H.R. 3893, passed into law, signed on March 23rd. It is to designate the facility of the United States Postal Service located at 100 Math Avenue in Interlochen, Florida, as the Robert H. Jenkins Jr. Post Office. And you think that's kind of unusual, folks? There are page after page in the official congressional report of these kind of laws that were passed and signed into law, strictly naming post offices after dignitaries. Now, this is the department of the government that is charged with budgeting and spending your money, trillions of dollars. You remember that great omnibus bill that was signed into law just a couple of months ago? $1.3 trillion worth of your money being spent. And they told us going in, it would increase the budget deficit by $1 trillion. And not only did the Senate bite off on it, the House bit off on it. President Trump signed it. And of course, doing so went against a lot of the things that he had campaigned on. And if you'll remember, when he made his speech after signing the omnibus bill, he made it very clear. Congress held a gun to his head, and he had to sign it, because if he didn't, the government was going to shut down. And of course, his administration and the Republicans would get the blame, and nobody wants the government to shut down, huh? Or do they? I think we'd have been a lot better off if we'd have just let things happen, see what happened there, and find a way to be a little more responsible at spending your tax dollars. But that did not happen. So, bill after bill, law after law came out of Congress over the last year, and only a handful, or less than a handful, three or four, were substantive. That omnibus bill was very substantive. I don't think it had the kind of meat in it that Americans wanted it to. And of course, the big one, the one that he gets a lot of credit for and should, is the tax bill that relieved a lot of the taxes for middle-income Americans. In fact, everybody except the wealthy got tax cuts. Companies got tax cuts. And then, of course, billions and billions and billions of dollars and bonuses were handed out. Wasn't expected. One of the byproducts of getting taxes reduced. But just think about it. If Congress had really been working, what they could have done. Oh, they worked. They passed Bill 1083. It was a bill to amend Section 1214 of Title V United States Code to provide for stays during a period that the Merit Systems Protection Board lacks a quorum. That was a very big bill, wasn't it? And then, of course, there was H.R. 657. Title of that one they passed on June 14, 2017, Follow the Rules Act. And then H.R. 534, U.S. Wants to Compete for a World Expo Act. That was signed into law on May the 8th, 2017. And the final one I'm going to mention is H.R. 353, April 18th of last year, 2017, Weather Research and Forecasting Innovation Act of 2017. So, the House of Representatives, the People's House, all those men and women up there elected for 2 years terms, they spend hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars in campaigning, and they promise they're going to work on our behalf when they get there. Let's just be honest about it. What do they do when they get there? They don't spend much time in session presenting, discussing, amending, and passing bills. The kind of bills that they promised they would pass when we elected them. They're up there to create an environment in which they look like they're doing something. We think they're doing something for us. And what they're really doing on the most part is taking care of themselves. And I'm not being facetious, folks. That is what they do. They take care of themselves. Think about it. Congress cost us, taxpayers, $1 trillion a year almost, just to maintain pay the congressmen, pay the senators, pay their staffs. Each staff and congressman and senator, with the exception of leadership, that get paid more money, in addition to their salary, they get a couple of $1 million to hire staff for office expenses, travel expenses. And there are 535 members of Congress on both sides of the hallway in Capitol Hill. And so you do the math. The building alone. Think about what it costs to operate the Capitol. Think about security. Think about all the support staff there. Think about all the travel. Think about the expense that goes to operate Congress. Talk about your representative. Think for a moment about your congressional representative that serves in the House. Every 2 years, they got a campaign. Of course, we're coming up to the midterms now. They haven't been in session very much. They're supposed to be in session this week, doing some serious stuff, but they made an announcement, if you remember correctly. We talked about it yesterday. The Senate did, but the same thing held true for the House. There's not going to be any meaningful legislation that's even considered before the midterms. That's in November. What are they doing? They're figuring out how to maintain the status quo. In reality, folks, those that go to D.C., when they find out what's there for them long term, they get a decent salary. And granted, for Washington, D.C., $170,000, $180,000 a year, if they're going to move their families there and get a house there, raise a family, that's not a lot of money. It's pretty expensive up there in Northern Virginia and in Washington, D.C. But most of them don't do that. Most of them live in their offices or they live, they'll buddy up and a couple of them will get apartments, live in hotels. And what they're doing, saving money, finding ways to make themselves fat and wealthy. And I'll just say this. This is also true about the Senate, but especially true about the House. How many poor congressmen and congresswomen do you know who have been poor when they leave office? I can't think of a one. Why is that? They get inside that system. Not only do they get a great salary, not only do they get great office expense and travel expense and the opportunity to let lobbyists feed them and give them trips and try to get them to pass those favorite bills of those lobbyists, which they often do, there are scholarships that lobbying firms give to the kids. It's not illegal. It's illegal to give directly to a congressperson, but not so illegal. It's very inappropriate, very unethical, but it happens every day. Hiring of relatives. Maintaining that balance of power is all they care about. You think that we have a Republican Congress, that the House of Representatives is Republican controlled? No doubt there are more GOP members in the House of Representatives than there are Democrats right now. But you know what? They don't want it to go heavy one way or the other. They don't want to make a lot of waves, because if they make waves, when the House goes back the other way, when the Democrats, that is inevitable at some point, will regain control of the House, they want to be in a good place so that they don't lose their power, they don't lose their status, they don't lose their position. They want to maintain. Nancy Pelosi, former Speaker of the House, she's the minority House leader right now. She has probably more power, even in the minority leadership in the House, than most of the leadership on the other side of the aisle. Why? Because she's garnered and then maintained that power and control because of what she can do. She raises money. She is probably the most prolific Democratic fundraiser in their party, and they can't afford to ditch her. Now, since we're talking about money, let's talk about what money really is all about in Congress and the House of Representatives. President Trump tweeted out today that he just had a great meeting with 12 freshman congressmen today, and had a great conversation about term limits. Boy, I don't know any Americans that aren't in office that don't think term limits is a good idea. Think about it. The way the Constitution was set up and set up Congress and the House of Representatives, the reason the House members serve only 2 years and the Senate members serve six, it's because the House was supposed to be comprised of everyday people who voluntarily gave 2 years of their lives to leave their towns and cities and businesses and represent their neighborhoods, their towns and cities in Washington for 2 years. That was a great sacrifice. But at the end of 2 years, they get to go back home. They're replaced by another citizen from their city or town. And it's a way to be a part of the government to represent your people. So now we have those 12 and many others that start talking about term limits. They don't want term limits. Who would have to ever put term limits in place? It would have to be a bill voted on and passed in the House of Representatives, go across the hallway to the Senate. The Senate would have to do the same thing. They're not going to make themselves leave Washington. They love it. It's a lifetime job. You serve 2 years in the House. You've got benefits for life, health care, retirement, all kinds of business opportunities in the private sector. You've been in government. All the major companies that have lobbying firms on K Street in Washington, D.C., they know you know somebody that's still in Congress that you can get their ear when it's time for a bill, a favorite bill, a bill that favors their company and gives them great financial opportunity. They need to bend somebody's ear. And you, even though you're out of office, you've got that ear. You can walk to Capitol Hill and walk in somebody's office that you know that's a friend of yours that you served with and talk them into doing something. It happens all the time. So term limits, they're not going to happen under normal circumstances. It's just not going to happen. Would it be good? Absolutely. That would mean that you go there on the first day you're in Washington, D.C., you're going to start, you're going to hit the ground running because you know you only have 2 years. You want to get a lot done for the people back home. You want to be able to tell the people, I worked hard for 2 years for you. And then you're going to go home and be replaced by somebody that thinks just like you. That's the way it should be. But it's not that way. It's about what can I get out of serving in Congress? Now, where's the power in Congress? Well, in the Senate, we talked yesterday about Mitch McConnell. He's a majority leader there, Republican from Kentucky. And then on the House side, there's Paul Ryan. You remember him. He ran for vice president and is from Wisconsin, a really good guy. Everybody likes Paul Ryan. He's, you know, he's young. He looks innocent. He's been there a while, but he's not a professional politician, or at least he likes people to think that. But how do you get power in the House? My congressman is a freshman. This is his first time to serve in Congress. He was a state legislator. He's an attorney, really good guy. And he was excited about running and winning and getting a chance to go to Washington, D.C. and serve. And so once you get there, to get any power, to get anything done, you've got to serve on a committee that's important. There are a lot of committees in Congress, and many of them have a lot of clout. The most popular committee and the one that everybody wants to get on is the Ways and Means Committee. Why? That's the committee that controls all the bucks. No spending is going to happen unless it goes to Ways and Means and it comes out of that committee and goes to the full floor. They are so powerful that anything almost without exception that they pass out of committee, when it goes to the floor, it's passed almost every time. So you would think Paul Ryan, the other GOP leadership that control the House, these young congressmen and women come in, they're going to be there for just 2 years guaranteed, and maybe sometime after that, they're going to find the brightest, the smartest, the most educated, the ones with the most energy, the ones that they can talk to and teach them and educate them on the ins and outs of serving in Congress and being a Republican congressman or congresswoman. Those would be the people they would want that would work hard on these committees. But you know how you get on a committee, a specific committee? You have to raise money. You have to buy them. You're probably going to die when I tell you this. You know how much it costs to be assigned to the Ways and Means Committee in the House? $450,000. Anybody that serves on the House Ways and Means Committee to get that seat, to get that appointment, has got to raise almost $500,000 in contributions to the Republican Congressional Caucus. The Judiciary Committee? That seems like a big deal. It is a big deal. $150,000 to get on that committee. Nothing's free. You go there to serve, and when you walk in the door, you bring one thing and only one thing with you on day one. That's your vote. There are 435 members of the U.S. House of Representatives. Each of them have one vote. Leadership of your party, they look at you when you walk in the door, and you're worth only your vote. And they make that very clear to you when you walk in the door. Second thing you bring to the table is if you want a good committee appointment, you bring money. You have to go back to your constituents, people that donated to your campaign, that helped you win that election and get that job in Washington. And you say, I need some more money. How about a donation to the Republican Congressional Caucus? And they write another check. Now, what does that mean in the long run? Well, first of all, it waters down your effectiveness. You're telling yourself and everybody else that you can be bought. You have a price. You want in that committee? You're willing to go out and raise money. But to raise the money, what happens? Somebody has to write you a check. You're going to be obligated to that special interest or that individual or that company. And so that means when they have a need, they have a desire for their entity or for themselves personally, whatever it is, when they call you or come knocking on your door, what are you going to have to do? You're going to have to at least listen. So all of a sudden, in just your short 2 years, are you going to serve them? Are you going to serve the people that sent you there with their votes? Folks, Congress is broken, horribly broken. And I don't know that there's anything that can be done. Congress is not going to police itself. All the talk you hear about these committees that investigate all evil and wrongdoing and all that kind of stuff, sure, they're doing what is necessary to be done, at least on the surface. But there's no hard stuff that comes out of Congress. I'll never forget Eric Holder, who was the Attorney General under President Obama. He refused, after being subpoenaed by a congressional committee, a subpoena, folks, normally that carries all the legal weight necessary to get immediate actions, especially if you're the United States Congress. The Congress has supervisory responsibility over the Justice Department. So the Attorney General comes in. You remember the Fast and Furious thing, gun running down in Mexico that went wrong, and we had a couple of border agents that were murdered by drug cartel members, and they used some of the guns that had been traded and put out there by the Holder Justice Department. You remember that? Testimony comes in. They're asking Eric Holder for documentation, all of the Fast and Furious documentation. He thumbed his nose at him and said he wasn't going to do it. He wasn't going to give it to him and just walked away. So what do? They try to get the federal attorneys in Washington to prosecute Eric Holder. You know what happened? Nada. Not a thing. Two Americans died senselessly. Guns that the U.S. government passed out trying to find drug cartel members and track those guns to find out how they got there and who let them get there. Those guns are still down there. Nobody knows. Eric Holder wouldn't present any documentation, and nothing happened to him. Congress is toothless. They're good at doing one thing, and one thing only: spending our money. I didn't really want to depress you with this part two of Broken, but Congress really is broken. Senate and the House of Representatives. What are we going to do about it? Well, that's another story, and I'll tell you what we're going to do in our next edition of this podcast at dnewman.org. We're going to go into a plan, a workable plan, step by step by step, a way that we, the United States citizens, the voters here in America, can take Congress back. Folks, if we don't take Congress back, think about it. A $1.3 trillion spending bill that is going to increase the deficit. That's the money we owe more than we bring in. $1 trillion. $1 trillion more. Where's that money going to come from? How are we going to pay the trillion back? How are we going to pay the interest to the countries, to the companies, to the individuals that buy those treasury bonds to make up that $1.3 trillion? It's mind-boggling. It's discouraging. It's heart-rending to think about. And we have a chance, as Americans, we have a chance to make it right and to right the ship and get it going in the right direction. So join us here tomorrow for another audio podcast. It will be the finale of Broken. Yep, Senate's broken, House is broken, Congress is broken. We're going to fix it. We're going to fix it together. One other note before we go away. Don't forget, on the homepage of dnewman.org in the bottom right side, you can log your email address in there. We don't sell anything. We don't sell our mailing list. We have tens of thousands of people that look in and listen in every day to the podcast and the written posts that go out. And so if you want to make sure you don't miss one, if you'll just log your email address in there, every night when there's a new story, a new podcast that goes up, you'll get an email with a link. And all you have to do is click on that link. It'll take you right to that podcast or right to that story, and you'll never miss anything. Make sure you don't miss tomorrow, the finale of Broken. Thank you so much for joining us here at www.dnewman.org. That's what we do. We bring you the truth. And we're going to keep on doing it. Have a great evening. So long, everybody.